Welcome to Bible Study for Progressives, a show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. We engage scripture in its historical context, plumb its depths for wisdom and guidance, and apply its lessons to current events and social issues. Whether you're a liberal evangelical, a New Age spiritualist, a social justice activist, or a postmodern theologian, there's something in this show for you. Come, be energized in spirit and mind to understand the word and what it means to be a spiritual person in today's world.
My name is Reverend Dr. Marsha Ludd Ford. I'm also a recovering civil rights attorney, and I started a ministry called Political Theology Matters in the course of a recent ministry that I had in Southwest Detroit, which is where our Latino communities live. And I decided to take my love of the Constitution, specifically the First Amendment, and marry that to my love of the gospel and see what kind of a difference I could make, what kind of contribution. And I spend my time writing, teaching, preaching, speaking about the importance of progressive Christians raising their voice in the public square for greater social justice. So a lot of times people are stymied by this notion of separation of church and state. And I help to teach about what we can do and what we can't do. And the list of what we can't do is actually quite short.
Bert, why don't you introduce yourself to Marsha so he gets to know you too?
Sure. My name is Bert Newton. Let's see, I have a podcast, Bible Study, Parody and Subversion in Matthew's Gospel. I've also written a little book on the Gospel of John, which is a political reading of the Gospel of John. I work for Making Housing and Community Happen, which is a Pasadena-based organization advocating for affordable housing here in Pasadena. And I'm ordained in the Mennonite Church, and I'm part of Pasadena Mennonite Church.
So, Joseph, do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, yes. I'm Joseph Dowd, and I'm a philosophy instructor at California State University, San Bernardino. And I know Rich through a philosophy and theology discussion group that I used to run.
Very good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a reading first, and then I'm just going to open it up for you guys. So that we'll just start with that, and then we'll have a discussion. So what I'm reading is called Arrest Trump, Biden's First Crisis by Rich Prosciutto. The people must demand that President Trump be impeached, removed, and arrested. The House must take the only action it can, impeachment. President-elect Joe Biden will face two crises in his first 100 days. He cannot sweep the insurrection under the rug. The Biden administration must accept this fact as its destiny and prepare to handle both crises promptly and correctly. There must be accountability. Impeachment is the minimum. While there are always risks, as we have seen, failing to hold our leaders accountable for their actions increases the risk that they will continue to abuse their power. If we fail to act now, we could face another coup attempt in the future. If we don't hold those responsible for inciting, planning, and participating in the assault on the Capitol, they will return better led and organized. There is no law against arresting the president. The United States Justice Department has a policy against indicting a sitting president, but that policy is subject to an exception in extraordinary circumstances. This situation where the president has incited an insurrection. Is an extraordinary circumstance justifying the arrest of the president? Police do not allow those who commit crimes causing death to be left in a position to commit those crimes again. As citizens, we can call for the arrest of the president. Even if it doesn't happen before the 20th, we must arrest the president and his co-conspirators soon afterward. Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen must recognize that now is the time to act to protect the public. While arrest and incarceration is a police action, not a political process, the president must also be impeached and convicted either by this Congress or the next. A conviction would prevent him from running for office in the future and could justify reversing the pardons he issued to his co-conspirators. We should not only impeach and convict him for the insurrection, we should also impeach him for the crimes identified in the Mueller report, and we should impeach him again for pressuring the leader of Ukraine to interfere in our election and convict him on all three. Then we must reverse many of the pardons he issued. We cannot expect to solve the problem of systemic injustice if we allow our leaders to act with impunity. The failure of the Capitol Police to protect the Capitol was a manifestation of white privilege and systemic racism in the United States. We cannot have three systems of justice, one for the rich and national leaders who can act with impunity, one for white people and the middle class, and one for Black and brown people who are killed with impunity. We cannot allow public officials to commit crimes. Indeed, the president should be held to the highest standard. We cannot expect to have a working system of justice if we allow our leaders to be above the law. Arrest the president now. It's not precluded by the law, only policy, and that policy is subject to the exception of extraordinary circumstances. It's appropriate for citizens to call for the arrest of public officials who abuse their power. Trump can be president and in prison. Mike Pence can take over the responsibilities of the office while the president is indisposed. The attorney general should recognize that this situation is an exception to the policy and arrest the president before he incites further violence. Even if he is not arrested before the 20th, by calling for Trump's arrest, we will be on the right track for the future. We must protect democracy, defend the Constitution, address systemic injustice, heal our divisions, and hold our leaders accountable. I guess what I'd like to do is turn to you, Marcia, and see if I'm right about that, or if I'm wrong about that, or if there's more it's more complicated than that, that we could arrest or should arrest the president and his co-conspirators.
Well, I certainly believe that there needs to be a major legal reckoning. When you say arrest him now, I don't know if you mean before the 20th, and I would not do that. I think there's not enough time. It will cause the people who have to litigate this to spin a lot of wheels on the whole question about whether a sitting president can be indicted, regardless of the exception that you cited. So I think it would be better to let his term expire. And if I was Nancy Pelosi, I would not deliver the article of impeachment until the Senate is ready, till her House managers are ready to actually try the case. Because my understanding is the way that it works is once the Senate gets the article, it has to start the trial within a reasonable period of time. They have to set rules for the hearing and all of that. But I think as the days unfold, we will learn more and more. And it doesn't hurt us to hold the article for a week or so just to see what else comes to light, which may strengthen the case. Although I think the case is very strong, the proofs I think are pretty simple because most of it's on video. but I do believe that he will also, he should also be prosecuted. I would like to see him prosecuted federally. I think he's going to pardon himself. And that will raise another question. The impeachment and the Senate jury trial is imperative that they convict him. And I think there's a growing opportunity for that to happen. We got to get 17 senators. It's a lot. But I also think there are several who are holding their cards very close to the vest that are seriously considering it. What'll probably happen is if he pardons himself, at least initially, we'll have to leave it up to the state courts to prosecute him for various things. And it's my understanding the New York Attorney General has got an arm's length list of charges to bring against him and his family. So he's going to have a legal quagmire. He may never see the end of it. He might not live long enough to see the end of all of this litigation and criminal prosecution.
I think what they're doing right now is that they're holding this over his head so that if he acts out on the 20th, they can act immediately. I think that's part of the calculation and why. But I think that's why the Democrats aren't having a big problem with that. Yeah, in the Senate. I'm sure there's problems. Maybe he should start it now, but I think everybody's waiting to hold it over his head and then pursue it after he's out.
Well, today, some guy showed up at the Capitol with false inauguration papers. I don't know if any of you saw that. Carrying a Glock, it's my understanding. And ammunition for a long gun that he didn't have with him, leads to the question, well, who else is he working with? So I think that there's going to be a rumble at the Capitol this weekend. I don't think they should be outside. And I think as more and more of this kind of evidence unfolds, it's going to make it more likely that we actually convict him. I first was upset with McConnell for waiting until the 19th. But now I think it's showing some wisdom in that it's allowing more evidence to pop up.
And what about reversing the pardons? I mean, I think these injustices, these guys have gotten away with crimes, some of them very severe and crimes. Is there a possibility of overturning his pardons?
You know, I don't know. I believe, and I haven't looked at it prior to this conversation, that the Constitution is silent as to other remedies other than removal if he's convicted by two-thirds of the Senate. I think the only remedy there is removal from office. Then there's the bifurcated vote, the separate vote, which is simple majority to bar him from ever holding office again. The pardon section, as you know, is a very broad reaching clause. It gives the president a great deal of power. So he can pardon people before they're even charged. I just don't know what the legal precedent would be. It could be a case of first impression, and that's all right, too.
Yeah, I think there's something about accepting the cases of impeachment. So I think that's supposed to mean that if a person is impeached, they cannot be pardoned. But I think I have a pretty strong argument to say that if the president is impeached for criminal conduct, then any pardon he hands his co-conspirators should be null and void. But in any case, what do you guys think, Joseph or Bert? Joseph, your mic's open, so if you want to speak, what type of opinions do you have?
Well, I feel like we're kind of in between a rock and a hard place here. On principle, yes, I think he should be impeached and prevented from holding office in the future, because to not do that, well, I mean, this goes way beyond Trump, because to not do that would be to basically set a terrible precedent, basically that the president is essentially above the law. The problem here is that he has a lot of supporters, you know, even now, and some of them involved with like right-wing militia groups and that sort of thing. I mean, again, I feel like this is a situation where you kind of have to just go by principle, because or else they're kind of lost. But my concern is that if we prevent him from holding office in the future, then that will kind of turn him into, well, not only will it turn him into a martyr in sort of the eyes of his supporters, but also it will, from their perspective, since they actually believe that the election was stolen and all this, that will mean that essentially we're there's no electoral avenue for them. It would be one thing if he still had the possibility of holding office in the future and he was just unelectable, right, from now on, as I think he probably would be. But if people feel that they have no option, no recourse within the law, then they're going to look for avenues outside of the law, as in violence, that sort of thing. And so that's really what I'm concerned about in this situation. I've always felt that the real threat was never really Trump himself, but rather the kind of the movement that he's triggered.
Yeah, he's created. I think that's an important thing, the movement he's created. I think once Trump and if we can deal with the propaganda that the right-wing media is pushing down on us, I think Trump will fade away. So I see it as coming down from the top. And I'm concerned about the fact that, you know, Trump has, everybody can claim Trump gets away with this, Trump gets away with that. Why does Trump always get away with that? Because there's always a reason not to hold him accountable. There's always a risk. There's always a reason why people say, well, not this time, not this time, not this time. But we're going to have to do it. Because what happens if we don't? They become emboldened. They become empowered. They become thinking they won. They're right. And so there's risk either way you go with that, one way or the other. Bert, what's up? How are you feeling and doing and on this issue?
Well, of course, I have no legal opinion because I'm not an attorney. I don't have a law degree. But to kind of support what Joseph and you were saying, that it's not just Trump, but the movement behind him, but that they didn't get that all on their own, that there has been this right-wing media for 25 years that has been softening the ground, so to speak, for someone like Trump to come along. And I've seen, I graduated from high school and college in Georgia, in South Georgia, not Atlanta. So South Georgia, deep South. And when I was there in the 80s, I left in 91. Most of my friends there and a lot of people I knew just didn't have any political opinions. Now a lot of them do, and they're right wing. Because in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't a right wing media. But with the rise of right wing media, they now have all these opinions and all these alternative facts, and they hate the media. And by that, they don't mean any of the right wing media, which is now actually larger than what they call the mainstream media. And so I keep wondering, like, how much the media, the right wing media can get away with these continued lies. Just they're making stuff up. They're spinning conspiracy theories. And we saw just recently that they could be sued by the voting machine companies. So two of the voting machine companies threatened to sue, and I think they are going forward with some of the suit. They're going to threaten to sue Lou Dobbs and Newsmax and one other, maybe One American News Network, I'm not sure. And immediately Lou Dobbs issued retractions, Newsmax issued retractions on that part of their conspiracy theory, not on anything else. So on that part of their wild conspiracy theory, they retracted because they were under threat of a lawsuit. Now, they lie about so much else, and it's destroying the country, and it's resulted in this mob that attacks the Capitol. I mean, yeah, Trump makes up stuff, but they repeat it, and they even feed him some of the, I mean, some of the stuff he's been lying about is stuff that he got from One American News Network or some other thing that they may not have even created, that might just come off the internet, but they broadcast it. They have this audience. Trump is one of the audience. He repeats it. And then a mob assaults the Capitol. So at what point do any of us, does somebody have standing to sue this right-wing, you know, misinformation media? I mean, the voting machine companies were able to do it. Who else can do it? Because this is just out, completely out of control. And that's what I'm looking at. Because as long as they're there, it doesn't matter whether we arrest Trump, impeach Trump, they're going to keep on making him a martyr. They're going to keep that movement. They're going to stoke the racism, the classism, the any kind of hate and anger they can stoke, which is what they, that's what they've been doing for 25 years. I mean, I would go home to my parents' house in Georgia, and my parents, by the way, in the 70s were Democrats. They were McGovern Democrats. They voted for McGovern when a lot of our friends were voting for Nixon. But by watching Fox News, they became right-wing Republicans. And so I'd go home and I would sometimes just 10 minutes of watching Fox News, I just couldn't believe the kind of class baiting, race baiting, gender baiting kind of thing, stuff. I mean, just in 10 minutes, it would just, I would go nuts. And that's my concern is that we need to do something about right-wing media and their continued lies and just making up stuff and stoking hatred. Because that's what's made it possible for Trump to get elected. I never thought somebody like Trump could get elected. And it's not that he's racist, that a lot of people are racist, but that he can lie so blatantly and be so corrupt and yet have a bunch of people that adore him, have millions, tens of millions of people that adore this guy that just lies blatantly, lies about stuff that doesn't even matter. So, yeah. Anyway, that's my thought.
A media accountability is the term that I've sort of come up with, that we're going to need to find a way to hold the media accountable as well, that the media is going to have to return to its ethics. I think it's the end result of free speech absolutism. When you say people are not corporations or people and money is speech. That's the result of First Amendment absolutism. And did I ever tell you guys about my McGovern story? I don't know if I did. Tell me. When I was in fourth grade, McGovern was running against Nixon, the last president to be impeached. No, he wasn't last, but the president that was impeached. And so I didn't like him. I told my fourth grade teacher that he was a crook. And, you know, I have some psychic abilities. And she got upset about that. So I made this sign and said, "Vote for McGovern." I spelled it wrong. And I went walking down the street. And then one of these guys who was handing out pamphlets said, go stand in front of the polling place." And being a fourth grader, I didn't know any better. So I went to stand in front of the polling place, and sure enough, I got picked up by the police. And I was a big kid, so they didn't know. They finally found out that I was a fourth grader. But the guy who told me got in trouble for that. But Marsha, what do you think about all of this?
Well, I agree that this alternate media is a problem, and it's going to continue to be a problem. And there are some First Amendment issues that go with that. I hope Dominion and the other firms are successful in their lawsuit, because they've committed it seems they have committed defamation and libel per se, because it has to do with their business activity, which means the proofs are much easier. And so I think there needs to be a reckoning, and that might be a great way to do it. At least for leaders who can be tied in to the lawsuit, if Lou Dobbs could be brought down a peg or two, that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. I think, though, we have to work on our messaging. And one of the reasons that I started Political Theology Matters is because I get so frustrated with particularly progressive and mainline Christians who are much more about being nice sometimes than they are about standing up and demanding that the gospel be followed. And we've got to fix that. We are always on the reactive, almost always. the radical right will say something ridiculous that runs completely counter to the gospel. And we either don't say something or we're always on our back foot. So we have got to start talking about the mandates from Jesus that appear over and over again in the Gospels, which are feed my sheep, love each other, care for each other. And he ties the Torah in there, care for the widow and the orphan and the stranger and the poor. So we have got to stop allowing our messaging to only be on the reactive. And we really need to start putting it out there that we are about community and inclusion and love of neighbor. And if we share, life is better. If the laws are just, if our society operates with a non-racial system, we're better. All of those things. It's going to take a lot of work and it's going to take a lot of time. And I think one of the best ways to do that, to get going quickly, is through community organizing.
Alex Jones got sued, too. He got sued for the Sandy Hook children that he alleged were actors. The parents were actors. And he got sued, too. That shut him up on that, too. So, yeah, I think we, again, there are a lot of protections for speech that maybe shouldn't be there when other falsehoods are spread that are dangerous to the public. But I wanted to give Joseph an opportunity to respond to some of what was said, and maybe we can talk about some of the religious or spiritual implications of this current dilemma.
Well, to be honest, on this particular issue, I don't have a lot to say about the religious or spiritual dimension. Yeah, actually, listening to what others have said, I am beginning to think that maybe that the biggest problem really is the right-wing media. Because, so Rich, you suggested that if Trump kind of goes away, then, you know, the Trump movement will sort of fizzle out. And actually, the more I think about it, I think you may be right about that. Because just to give one example, when George W. Bush was president, right, he had a lot of supporters on the right wing. And now he managed to botch several things up so badly that he kind of ruined his brand. And now, I mean, my impression actually is that the kind of the most ardent Trump supporters, George Bush is kind of a pariah among the most ardent Trump supporters. I mean, rightly so, in my opinion. But anyway, the point is, it was almost kind of like a huge flip in ideology there, because what Bush represented, I mean, he kind of represented neoconservatism and this sort of muscular internationalism, to use a gentle phrase, right? Whereas Trump, I mean, he's, you know, this America first isolationist, you know, has no interest whatsoever in bombing people into democracy. So, I mean, this huge, like almost 180 ideological shift going on there. But in each case, it was the right-wing media kind of channeling support toward these guys. And so let's say that Trump goes away and the Trumpist sort of movement fizzles out. Well, then it's just, next time it's just going to be someone else, right? Some other flavor of right wing that's going to be propped up by the right wing media. So yeah, I actually, just listening to others speak, I've come around to the view that it's the right wing media that is the biggest problem here.
I'd like to add to that, too. And I'd also like to say it's the right-wing pulpit that is partly responsible for this, because there are a lot of preachers out there who are preaching that this form of Christianity is acceptable, where you're singing God Bless America at the Capitol and you're beating somebody with a flagpole and, you know, you're surrounded by signs that say Jesus saves and so forth. There's a real spiritual disconnect going on with a lot of folks who are supportive of Trump and identify as Christians. And so I think that is where a lot of our work is. And like I was talking about, the messaging that needs to go on. I think we need to spend the energy on saying our stuff and not trying to shut them up, because it's going to be very hard, if not impossible, to do it. We have to counter with strong messages about morality and what is right in a democracy and a system of laws and opportunity for justice. I loved when Biden released his $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package a couple of days ago, because he said it was the moral thing to do. And we don't like talking about that anymore, I guess. We don't like talking about what's right and wrong. And certainly Trump is the epitome of that. I don't think he's said a moral word basically the whole time he's been in office. So I'm just throwing that out there. I see that as our purpose, is putting our energy into our messaging and trying our best to bring people around. But to speak to the middle and the left and keep the middle.
Yeah. I think we need to reach out to the middle. That's exactly one of the strategies of fighting the coup, is to get the middle of the country. And it's been so much good news to see business pulling their support from Trump, to see the military saying, we're not behind you. Those were key, very, very key. If those things didn't happen, we'd be in a different country right now.
Be in martial law, I do believe.
Yeah. And I've been advocating for propaganda education, trying to get people aware of the power of propaganda generally, so that they won't become subject to it. But there's going to be a lot of damage, and we're going to have to do some work to repair our democracy. One of those things might be, should the president be indictable? Should something like this happen again, might be one reform that could be done. So I want to talk about that, and then also this idea of reaching to the center, which I think there's two things that all Americans, that as Americans, we can reach out to the center. First of all, is democracy. Americans believe in democracy. Even those fascist guys are using the language of democracy. Some of them are really fascist, but the Trump movement was, the Republicans were all riled up because they thought democracy was being assaulted, and they're wrong about that, and they're being uncritical about that, and there's something wrong in the fact that they accept those lies from an obvious liar, which sort of brings me to spiritual poverty. I did a tarot reading, and there's some spiritual poverty in the world that is leading to this. So we're going to, and the other thing is, and I used to say Christianity, but now I say use scripture in your arguments, it'll reach out to the center of the country. And then we have to, of course, deal with the anti-religious, anti-Christian sentiment that exists on the left as well. Right. So I'm wondering, do you guys have any ideas about what to do next? And then what's going to happen on the 20th? That's going to be my last question for you guys. But what type of changes do you think we can make?
I agree that organizing is central. It's really hard to do, especially for us, those of us who are introverts. But organizing means reaching out to our neighbors, organizing on a local level. I'm part of an organization where we are organizing around affordable housing. And that's something that a wide swath of people here agree with. So we're working with evangelical churches. We're working with liberal churches. And we're finding, you know, a lot of common ground. I do think we need to be very progressive in our ideas, maybe moderate in our language, but progressive in our ideas. One guy told me one time, it's one of those times that somebody tells you something that's really like key and profound at the time, you know, I'm not really paying attention, and later on I get it. And he said, you can say the most radical things, but if you use the right language, people will listen. Things like Medicare for all. I think, you know, most people want that. When you explain that, most people want it. Like even something like reparations, which I know is a heavy political lift. But if we do substantial reparations, not some watered down version of it, but something substantial, then we have a whole community that has been marginalized that gets lifted up, and we all benefit. So I don't know. I think we can, like, to me, I don't have a lot of hope for salvation within capitalism. And so I tend to be pretty anti-capitalist, but I don't usually use that language. I'll just say the prevailing economic system. Mm-hmm. And so I'll use that language instead. So I think we need to organize. We need to reach out locally, find common ground, use language to talk about human values. And like you said, like use the language of morality. In some of the organizing we do, we talk about a moral budget. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see it.
Great. How about you, Joe?
When it comes to how to engage with people, I think there actually may be a certain opportunity here for progressive Christians, because I think that sort of the popularity of Trump within the religious right has, I mean, for a lot of people who aren't religious or are kind of apolitical Christians, it really kind of damaged their perception of conservative Christianity, because Trump in many ways, at least personally, represents the antithesis of a lot of the supposed values of conservative Christianity. And now, I mean, this is a precarious moment for the church in general, for Christianity in general, because especially among young people like my age and younger, I mean, religiosity is going way down, you know, and also Christianity in general, it's moving out of, it used to be the West that was sending missionaries to other places. Now Christianity is kind of migrating out of the West and really moving, well, the yeah. Northwest, right? It's moving to, you know, places like South America and Africa. And so this is a precarious time for Christianity in the West. But yeah, I think kind of ironically, the damaging of conservative Christianity by Trumpism, I think might represent an opportunity for progressive Christians to present a more palatable and hopefully more faithful presentation of the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add on that, Marcia?
I do. I'm writing about this, and one of the cautions that I make is, you know, the question, what do we do now? Well, there's a number of things that we can do now. We can demand our senators, particularly if they're Republicans, to vote to convict Donald Trump. That's really, really important. But when the inauguration is over and hopefully the tumult has lessened greatly and we all go home, there are many things that we can do. And I think you mentioned a really important point, Burton. I'm actually writing about this. And that is, introverts and extroverts are interested, generally speaking, in doing different things because that's how they're wired. And so we have to take a look at what our personal passions and skills are and be honest with ourselves. If being on the front lines of a protest is just not for us, that's okay, because we are the body of Christ. And there are others who want to be on the front lines or feel called to do that and will if they are asked to. So we have to measure what we're good at, what we're passionate about, and then we bring those private pieces of power together with other people, and then we bring all of it together for public power. And we can assign roles according to what people are best at. It's a beautiful analogy to the body of Christ. And Paul writes about this in the 12th chapter of the first letter to the Corinthians. So I also loved what you said, Rich, about everything that we do, we have to ground in scripture, and we have to make sure that people understand why we are doing and saying what we do, so that they can grab onto that and understand it's just not coming from out of nowhere. So those are my
awesome. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, or somebody mentioned to me, is having a truth and reconciliation process, something like South Africa went through, because we're going to need to separate in our public's mind what's true and what's false.
Yes.
So last question of the night is, what's going to happen on the 20th? I'll tell you what I think, because I did a tarot reading on it that actually predicted the coup, and you can hear that or see it on YouTube or hear it on the podcast. It predicted a coup by force and violence, and I interpreted it as not necessarily a slaughter, but just a few lives. And really, I wanted to interpret it as just the potential and not actually going to happen, but it ended up happening. So, but what the tarot card reading gave me for the 20th was disappointment. And so not death, not violence, thank God, but disappointment. I think we're pretty much set up that it's not good. The Democratic Party made a big deal about how Biden's going to be president and he's going to be made president by the inauguration, and that is going to have this superpower to make him president. And I think Trump is insistent that no, he's going to be the shadow president. And he's interested in making sure that Biden becoming the legitimate president of the United States does not occur, at least unchallenged. So we're thinking he's probably going to try and pull something or do something. Apparently there are rallies. And even though he's being contrite right now, more or less, he's not really stopping what he's doing. So, but it's set up for disappointment already. I mean, just look at Washington, D.C. So I think that's probably already right. But what do you guys think is going to happen on the 20th? You guys have any premonitions?
I don't have a premonition. I thought on the 6th there would actually be more violence. I just didn't think it would be in the Capitol building. That was a surprise to me. But I actually thought there would be more violence. And I remember just thinking, like, this is going to be weird because a lot of the police are Trump supporters, but they're going to have to stop these crazy Trump supporters from doing what they want to do, you know. So I knew it was going to be weird and crazy and violent, but I just didn't think they would get inside the Capitol building. So I think on the 20th, there's probably going to be a similar level of violence, maybe a little bit more. But this time they got all the National Guard there. So I think Biden will be safe. But then I don't know, you know, there could be some crazy Trump supporting National Guardsman who turns around and shoots Biden or something. So I don't know. Ever since 2016, I've stopped trying to tell the future because I never thought Trump would be elected. So I've stopped. I've since then assumed I don't really know what's going to happen.
And that's a good assumption to take in most cases. And I wish people would be less about, we know what's going to happen. Like, we know that the Senate's not going to convict, so why impeach? Because you have to hold the president accountable. That's why. What do you think, Marcia? Do you have any?
I don't know. I'm with Bird on that. I think that they are well fortified. I hope they did a lot of vetting with whoever's stationed right at the Capitol. Of course, I'm in Michigan, and you all know we have had quite a tumultuous time with these folks getting on our Capitol with semi-automatic weapons in April. And then several of those folks have been charged with the conspiracy to kidnap and execute our governor, Gretchen Whitmer. So I feel like I'm on high alert. They're saying they're going to do the ceremony outside, and that really bothers me. I think it's a mistake. I think they should do it in the rotunda. There doesn't have to be a lot of people there, I would imagine. You need a couple of witnesses and the Chief Justice, and, you know, they can videotape it and stream it. But for heaven's sakes, why would you put them out in the open like that? I assume they're going to have plexiglass around them if they do it. I'm hopeful it'll go off without a hitch and we'll get on with it. Trump is supposed to fly out that morning on Air Force One down to Mar-a-Lago. So he's supposed to clear out the morning of the inauguration. That's the plan.
Keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
How about you, Joe? You have your crystal ball?
No, I don't have a crystal ball, and I've always been extremely bad at making predictions. So I'm with the others. I have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, aside from, I'm fairly sure that someone's going to try to do something crazy. Maybe they wouldn't be really in a position to cause that much damage, but someone's going to try to do something crazy. That's all that I can predict.
This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.